Hello and welcome to TechPod, where we discuss all things e-discovery, data privacy, cybersecurity, and tech innovation. I'm Kevin Albert, and I feel like I have a decent knowledge of tech.
And I'm Laura Milstein, and I too feel pretty tech confident today.
But either way, this is why we bring on heavy hitters each week in the industry to help us break down these topics. Laura, who are we talking to today?
Today we are talking to Tim Wong, who is a highly regarded entrepreneur known for his groundbreaking work in the fintech and healthcare industries. He is the chairman of the board of Nitra, a smart finance platform designed to transform financial management for healthcare providers. He has an impressive background in finance, technology, and healthcare, and we are really excited to hear more from him. So, Tim, welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to be on.
We're really excited to have you on today. So I want to get into this straightforward. Entrepreneur, fintech, healthcare, you kind of have a mixed bag of everything. And I want to start with the entrepreneur fact. I mean, that's a word that, frankly, Tim, I'm just going to say it, it's overused. I'm a consultant. I'm an entrepreneur. I work in AI. What does that mean? You get into meetings, you're on more meetings. That's what all I hear when people say things like this. So can you sell me on how entrepreneur is different, how I should care when somebody says entrepreneur?
Well, so the canonical definition of entrepreneur is someone who takes an idea and brings together capital and people and technology and resources to make something out of nothing. And so it's someone who has the capacity and the capability and the willingness to look at a market opportunity, whether it's like a changing market dynamic or an empty plot of land or whatever the case is, and imagine a new future for that particular opportunity. And then they bring their idea, pull together a team, raise some amount of capital, execute, you know, week to week, month to month, building their idea towards making a new future and a new reality. And so when it comes to, you know, some of the stuff that I've been involved in, you know, in fintech and healthcare and legal and now in energy and aerospace and the like, there've been quite a large number of opportunities that I've seen, but fundamentally, you know, my day-to-day and then the kind of reason and the kind of methodology that I approach towards doing things comes down to looking at something, seeing that there's a problem, being able to solve that problem for someone, and then being able to sort of create something that makes sense for them.
Okay. I'll take that in for a minute. I do want to say, though, what you're saying is very fair on solving a problem. I think that's the whole point of being an entrepreneur. It's I want to take an issue. I want to resolve this. I want to do it better. I want to recreate something. But if you look at this, and I'm just going to ask you straightforward, do you consider all three of the people I'm about to say entrepreneurs, or would you say not all of them? And if so, which ones do you not? One, real estate agent. Two, CEO of a startup that is inventing an AI robot. The robot cleans homes kind of like a Roomba, but in a different way. It doesn't just go on the floors. It can climb kind of up. So it's a little more inventive. Or the third one I'm going to say here is I have now an owner of a new football stadium, like an NFL football team. So NFL already exists, but they have now started a new team in a new location. Maybe we'll go with LA because they only have like 8 teams out there now. So another LA team. So those are three different examples. Are they all entrepreneurs in your opinion?
Definitely the second. First, in terms of how you think and approach your job, I think if you think about your job as a business in terms of getting customers and thinking about digital acquisition and turning it into like some sort of an agency or brokerage or whatnot over time, that's I have a really good friend of mine in DC who literally started off as a singular real estate agent and then built it up to a business of 1,000 agents. And you know, they probably did like $1 billion in transactions a year. And that's certainly one way to build a business. The third depends on how they became an owner, I guess. I mean, if they bought in, you know, bought this team, if they have a view, if they have a vision for the team, right, in terms of like maybe they're dead last in the league and they feel like, you know, there's technology they can bring in and new experiences and hotel developments they can build around the stadium and the like. That's certainly like someone who has an idea, brings in capital and people and talent, and then turns that idea into a reality. If you're just sort of like passively investing in stuff and kind of looking at things, and I probably wouldn't consider that an entrepreneur.
That's fair. I want to talk a little bit about the fintech space. Can you talk about your experience in the fintech space at a high level? And then I want to kind of go a little bit deeper from there.
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, Just rewinding a little bit, about 10 years ago, I started my first company in the legal AI space. We built it up over 10 years or so, took it public on the New York Stock Exchange last year. And then about 2 years ago, partnered up with one of my co-founders, and we started our second company, really at the intersection of healthcare and finance. So really in the kind of fintech space, everyone calls themselves fintech, but there's really only a handful of actual financial services that are provided to customers. It's credit cards, loans, accounts, payments, and investing. Like those are basically, like every fintech company on the planet can basically start off with one of those five verticals, and they typically expand into the second, third, fourth vertical. So for us, when we were starting our second company, basically I thought, okay, well, we want to pick a particular customer segment that is being underserviced and then provide them with a financial service that is digital and solves a particular problem for them. And so we picked providers, so doctors, and then we started building credit cards, loans, started expanding into payments and accounts. And then, you know, over time, we'll expand into insurance and investing. But those are the things that we sort of decided to go after. And that's where Nitra in particular stands today.
So what are some of the issues with around the, like the regulatory issues related to that? I mean, obviously around the loans, especially, there's a lot of weird laws and a lot of odd issues. Obviously, you know, they keep the government, you know, the Biden administration keeps pushing out the date as to when you start to start paying your loans back and all that. And so there's a lot of funniness happening there.
Well, so we operate in a certain segment of the market, which is supporting doctors in America. We believe strongly that it's very hard to be a doctor or a dentist or a provider or whatnot, and starting your own practice or building your group practice, whatever the case is incredibly difficult. I think it's gotten more difficult in the last 10 years, given that the large institutional retail banks like the Bank of America's and the Chase and whatnots of the world are no longer really in the business of providing small loans for individuals or for small businesses. And a lot of that has been, you know, pawned off now to like the SoFis and whatnots of the world that are kind of providing incremental fintech services. So we came in believing that building a dedicated business credit card, you know, partnered with an institutional lending program for physicians and surgeons and cardiologists and dentists and dermatologists and ophthalmologists, using proprietary data, using proprietary information that we have, and specifically targeted for those customers, could really solve that problem. So from to your point on the regulatory perspective, when we started the company, we had to go 50 states, state by state, obtaining licenses. And then, of course, you know, in the medical space, there's quite a large amount of work being done in terms of data privacy or HIPAA compliance and the like. But we've all essentially kind of incorporated as part of our overall process. And the reality is that, like, I worked in the government before, and I you know, my first company was in the legal tech space. And so I have a pretty intricate understanding of the regulatory landscape, which I think gave us a pretty big advantage.
I have a quick follow-up on this, and maybe I'm completely off here, but I want to talk to somebody, and this is not you, so this is a personal thing that I'm sharing that I need to find somebody in the space, but maybe you can help out here, is I want to talk to somebody who does tech around like vet tech. And I don't mean like a war vet, I mean veterinarians. And so when you're talking about the medical field, I assume that your product, and tell me if I'm wrong, doesn't encompass vets. And I recently found out, which I did not know, fun fact, vets make significantly less money than regular doctors, than people doctors. And I know some of you out there are like, yeah, obviously. Not obviously. You're going to so much school and you make so much less money, and your job is important. If anybody has a dog or a cat or some other animal that they care about, you know what I'm talking about. You're going to pay these stupid bills. The vets aren't getting that. They get a normal, mediocre salary, in my opinion. Sorry if you're a vet out there, but I would like to hear from you, vets. So my caveat in the middle here, Tim, but I'm curious, does your platform, what we're talking about, have anything to do with vets?
Yeah, well, we do service some veterinarians as well on our platform. You know, I would say that we've actually done a pretty deep dive into what we call like the pet care market. And so in the pet care market, which is very different from, I would say, the healthcare market, you've got a system where pet insurance, as an example, pet health insurance is not a mandatory requirement. I guess it depends on the state, but it's usually not a mandatory requirement. And the reimbursement rates, as well as the sort of existing sort of pharmaceutical ecosystem around pets, is not as robust, certainly, as human beings, right? So the reason why, you know, doctors make what they make is because of the way that the system is constructed, because of the healthcare systems, the pharmacy systems, and the reimbursement rates sort of all associated with that. The vet ecosystem, which is still developing and actually very fast growing, as an example, is highly fragmented. The pet care insurance market is even more fragmented. And so the payment systems for coming into vets actually results in a very lumpy payment system, which will likely result in less loans, less expansionary capabilities, and of course, you know, less economic opportunity for vets overall.
So I'm kind of surprised by one of the things you said, because for me, I'm under the impression that doctors are able to get loans to pay off their debt pretty easily. Or it seems like there are either credit card companies or banks or whatever that are lining up to give doctors money because they are generally a good financial risk, because there's a lot of different ways. Obviously, I know that doctors come out of school with a ton of debt and all that, but I guess I'm surprised to kind of hear your take on that. Are you kind of saying the other way?
No, I think when you talk to a lot of physicians, it's not only the credit piece is hard, but also the financial management piece is hard. And so I think this is the case at any point with any person starting some small business, which is essentially what a lot of the independent practices are, is that it's just hard. I mean, you know, getting the loan is hard, setting things up is hard. What I find a lot of times when I talk to physicians is they don't know what their financial picture looks like. And so if you go down the street to like your local bagel shop or your pizza shop or whatnot, the restaurant owner is going to know how much they spend on cheese, on tomatoes, on bread or whatever. Because the healthcare system is so complicated, doctors don't know how much they're getting paid, when they're getting paid, what they're spending money on, if they're overspending or underspending on certain things. So imagine like a dermatology practice that collects a certain amount of revenue from insurance, a certain amount of revenue from patients. That revenue is very lumpy, right? In terms of whether or not the insurance companies pay you back or whether or not you're getting a certain number of patients. And then, you know, if you administer Botox as an example, how many vials should you buy this month? Should you buy 20 or 30 or 200? How do you sync up your expenses against your cash management? And so those types of problems make it actually more difficult to underwrite, both on the credit side, but also just operate your business at the end of the day.
Is there a worry, though, that this is just solving doctors who are just living above their means? You know, there are a lot of doctors who are trying to join the local golf club or drive a really cool car. Is this a matter of them trying to manage this process better?
I think that what we typically underwrite are credit cards and installment loans associated with medical equipment purchases. So like a new exam table or dental chair, which are actually quite surprisingly expensive, or ongoing inventory purchases. So like we have a large number of dermatologists on our platform, and the amount of money that doctors spend on purchasing Botox is like in the hundreds of thousands a month for typical practice. And so the ability for them to be able to kind of have kind of good financial services that enable them to be able to get everything linked up together, I think is important. One of the things we provide as an example that is not available at like Chase or American Express or whatnot is we can say two things. The first thing is, you know, you swipe your credit card at like Allergan or whatever, and you probably overspent on Botox relative to the next five dermatologists in your neighborhood. And so here's five other vendors you could go to that could save you money based off of the data that we have. The other thing you might say is, okay, well, why don't you link up your patient scheduling software, you know, with our inventory management solution, and we'll tell you predictively when you need to go order the next batch of scalpels or whatever, you know, to kind of line up with your procedures. And so you're not being crunched from a cash flow perspective in operating your practice. Those types of like analytics and support for doctors is something that we provide that, you know, like it's just Amex doesn't, they don't care about your business ultimately.
I like where your head's at, and you're reminding me, got to get that Botox appointment. Thanks for that reminder out there. Kev, do you do Botox, Kevin?
I have never done it, no.
It's amazing. I highly recommend it to everyone listening. Tim, have you ever done Botox?
I've not done Botox before.
Okay, well, I feel lonely out here. For all of you listening that are like, girl, I get you. I know. Thank you. We're on the same team. And for those listening that don't get me, maybe one day you'll regret that. Anyway, Tim, focusing back, do you think that doctors should be providing healthcare based on how much money they make on that treatment?
Look, I mean, I don't want to make like normative statements like about what people want to do with their lives. I think some people go into medicine for different reasons, right? Some people want reputation, some people want to save lives, some people want to make money. You should do what you want to do ultimately. And so the healthcare system is a whole separate value statement, I would say, right? So, you know, if the question is like, does fee for service make sense? It might make sense if the market was transparent and it was open and it was an actual like competitive market. But I think if you walk down the street, for instance, in New York City, and you ask for a laser procedure at this dermatologist versus a laser procedure at a dermatologist, literally in the same building, they may charge you different fees for the same service. And so the lack of transparency is a problem. And the ecosystem as it currently stands, I think, is not supportive of that. I think there are kind of new methodologies for delivering healthcare. So there's certainly one way of paying for healthcare, right? Which is like you pay your health insurance every month and then you go see a doctor and the doctor reimburses your insurance company and they get paid. There are new mechanisms, for instance, where doctors are now in charge of like a certain population. Like it's like, you know, I'm in charge of these 5,000 or 10,000 patients and you get paid by the insurance company to keep that population healthy no matter what. And so there's kind of new models that are kind of coming out around payments that I think are more innovative. And the US is definitely testing some of those models right now.
Is this a problem that only the US faces? Is this because we don't have Medicare for all?
No, I mean, I think you'll see similar dynamics even in like non-democratic countries like China or even in other democratic countries like in Korea, as an example, where there's quite a large amount of elective procedures and the like. So I think it just depends on, frankly, like what the country values and how healthy that country is. And so, you know, the reality is that like the healthcare system exists in the way that it is for a certain reason. And for better or for worse, we have this system, you know, in America at least, that protects 300 million plus people and is the way that we deliver everything from emergency room services to Botox and laser procedures. And that's kind of, it's just kind of is a system that we have today.
So what happens if people keep living? I mean, if people keep living longer and longer, is this a problem that's only going to get worse?
Well, I mean, presumably, if people keep living longer, it's because they're healthier, right? And so there should be sort of an offset. But I think speaking as an entrepreneur, as a tech founder, the market just keeps getting bigger, right? More people, more diseases, more pharmaceuticals, you know, more medical services, more volume through our credit cards, more lending to doctors, more doctors in general. It's definitely a very big growth market. And so if I were to pick a market to invest in or spend time in over the scope of like 10, 20, 30 years, I mean, healthcare would definitely be at the top of the list.
I think that's a fair statement. Quick question. Are you up for a quick game?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Thank you for accepting this. So for this game, we're calling this game Healthcare Challenge. And the challenge is really, it's kind of a would you rather healthcare version, just so you know, and you can roll with this. So you have a few options. You can either go to your dentist twice a year, which is honestly the recommended. Go see your dentist twice a year for cleanings. It's great. A lot of dental issues. If you skip the dentist, don't do it. You can do that. But if you do that, you can not go see any doctor throughout the year. You can only see your regular doctor one time throughout the year. So you get to go once, but you can't see any other doctor. So you get to go to the dentist twice, but you can see no other doctor except your regular doctor once a year only. Or you can go to dermatologists, you can go to ENTs, you can go to any doctor unlimited that you want to go to. However, you can never go to a regular primary care. So you have to know what's wrong and go to that specialist, and you can't go to the dentist at all either. What are you going to choose?
So I can't go to a dentist, but I can go to like an orthodontist.
Yeah.
Or
option two. Yeah, you could go to an orthodontist, I guess, but you can't go to a dentist. So no, an orthodontist don't do dental cleaning, just not here.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, maybe you need some braces, you can do that. Some Invisalign, get crazy, but you can't go get the dental cleaning and you cannot go to a primary care doctor. It has to be like, again, an ENT, a dermatologist. So you can get that Botox. That's option two. Or again, option one, you can get your two dental cleanings a year and you can go to your primary care once a year, but no specialty doctors. And that's it.
I would pick the second. And largely because all doctors have sort of like a basic level of medical training that can sort of do basic diagnostics. But like, you know, so just as a, like a, as an aside, like if you ever think about the healthcare market, you can roughly divide it into two things, right? So like first is diagnostics and the second is therapeutics. So you're either looking for what's wrong with you or you're trying to fix something that's wrong with you. And that's basically all of the healthcare market. So of these, the life-threatening ones obviously are you want to be in a position where you can solve the things that are wrong with you. And so put another way, it's actually a very smart question, right? Which is like, would you rather be in a position where you are constantly trying to figure out like this whack-a-mole of like finding things that's wrong with you from a diagnostic perspective, or would you rather have access to full therapeutics, assuming something is constantly wrong with you? And so I just assume most people have something wrong with them. I mean, you know, they're fighting some chronic disease, they're fighting some health issue or whatnot. And so, you know, I think the ability to find the best person, best care for each individual is something that I wouldn't take for granted.
I think I would do the same. Kev, would you do the same or would you go with option one?
I think I say the same for sure.
Yeah. It would be tough though. I love the dentist. I know I'm like a rare freak who, but I'm like, hell yeah. Every 6 months, see me in the dentist. I love it. Just a fun fact. Well, Tim, you have been great and we really appreciate you coming on today. Loved hearing about your entrepreneur background with the FinTech Healthcare Combo Pack. You're awesome. So thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
So, Kevin, we just spoke with Tim Wong, the entrepreneur, fintech, healthcare, just guru all around. What were your tech takeaways?
I thought it was interesting. I'm a little bit familiar with this world sort of tangentially. And so I thought it was interesting to kind of hear his take on it. I think it's funny that doctors are able to run as businesses and can just get loans. And it's really easy for them to overextend. It's crazy because some of them are using them for real things, like he said, medical equipment, but some of them are just doing it to buy luxury cars and golf membership. And it's crazy because some of it is that they are trying to keep up the lifestyle of being a doctor. And especially when you're young and you're buying a house and you're getting families, like it's a big push for it. So if they, you know, like run out of money, they can always just go back and do it because doctors are considered a good risk. And so to me, it is crazy, but you see it so many times where doctors will just get so overextended. And so I see this as a business and I definitely am amazed that this exists for sure.
I mean, I think if you're going to be a corrupt doctor, there's just so much opportunity out there. I don't think you should be a corrupt doctor. It's terrible. But the healthcare system is corrupt. I'm sorry, but it's insanity. Yeah. And you never really know who to trust. And that's the shame is you need healthcare. You need good doctors, but you also don't know what to trust. Like, and it's not even always the doctor's fault. I mean, look at the pharmaceutical companies that are like, this will cure your gout. It's like nothing cures gout. This will make it better though. Will it?
And
I don't know.
And you can always find a shady doctor to give you a prescription for almost anything. I'm amazed.
Or a stupid doctor. A doctor that I don't even mean to call them like stupid, but at some point, if you're not constantly relearning and re-educating in any field, you're kind of just following along. So if you trust your pharmaceutical salesperson, I mean, again, sales, they're making money when they push a drug on you. So how do you know what's real? You have to be doing your own research, which is really hard. And sometimes it's like, they're not like taking it to the lab as the doctor and doing, I mean, it's a fine line all around. But I think honestly, the biggest thing that I took away from this, which is irrelevant to most people, I'm sure. But when he said that dental chairs are quite pricey, I looked into this. And so I want to also say, I think a lot of people rent these things. So, you know, like you think of a Canon printer, a Ricoh, a Xerox, whatever. Most companies don't buy their copy machines, their printers, they rent them. There are companies like Dext Capital that does the same thing, except for doctors. You know, I'm going to rent my healthcare. I clearly can't speak, but you know what I'm saying? Like their surgery equipment, their actual medical devices. A lot of them will rent it from companies like Dex Capital. There are others. I'm just giving an example. But if you want to buy a dental chair yourself, the prices actually very much vary. So you can get one as low as basically $3,000. Or there's this luxury one, ADEC 500. This one is pimping everybody. Does anyone use that word anymore? Early 2000s.
I don't think so.
Pimping, just like the early 2000s. This dental chair is originally about $21,000 and it's on sale 50% off. You can get this luxury dental chair for like $10,000. I mean, hell's yes.
Keep that in mind if you need a gift for the holidays, right?
I'm just saying, like a dental chair is something I probably would buy, you know, like Merry Christmas to your dental office, nice chair. You want them to be comfortable. I'm probably going to rent the equipment and buy the actual furniture we'll go with. But also, if I was like, I'm just trying to start up or I'm corrupt, I'll get a loan for that expensive chair. And then I'm going to buy the like $3,000 one. That's how it's going to work. Anyway, if you want to learn more tips and tricks on how to be a bad doctor, or just be corrupt in general, reach out to us. We'd love to help and hear from you at contact@thattechpod.com. If you want to subscribe to follow us because you don't want to tell us that you're interested in it, but you kind of want to learn more, you should. Head on over to www.thattechpod.com to enter your email to subscribe. If you are on social media, that's right, #LinkedIn, so are we. Please follow us, linkedin.com/thattechpod. Kevin, what else can they do?
Go to wherever get your pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever, and leave us a rating. Let us know how we're doing. All that helps us with the algorithms and gets us out there. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.